This is the seventh episode of KBOO News' special series, Sex for Sale, on the business of sex in Portland. Today we're talking about the world's oldest profession. What is it like here in Portland, and is it taking on a new look?
Hold on. Is prostitution really the world's oldest profession? No, of course not. We accept that cliche for some reason, but it's really just a hollow assertion. The oldest profession is, what, healing? Religion? Maybe politics? Some say it's making garments, but that's a subject for another day. Let's get back to Portland. There are many faces of prostitution here, and no one speaks for all of them. Let's talk with Red Reed, who runs an organization called Stroll. We'd call Red an activist escort. Here's Red describing her work.
I danced for 10 years, and now I'm an escort, and I'm on hiatus from dancing. I'll probably go back at some point, probably not in Portland, because I don't like the way the setup is here. But I now do street outreach to street-based sex workers, and I publish a quarterly zine by sex workers and for sex workers, and I weigh in when I can on legislation that affects us.
And here's her description of what Stroll is doing.
Stroll is an organization by and for sex workers. It does community-based outreach with street-based sex workers. We also held a lot of workshops during the time that we were working on the BOLI legislation. We worked with BOLI and Northwest Workers Justice Project to try to explain the difference between an independent contractor and an employee to dancers. There was a lot of pushback against those workshops. So we have a yearly art show, other stuff, memorials.
Besides her zine, Red publishes something she calls Bad Date Line. It's kind of a warning system that identifies people that sex workers need to watch out for.
It's nonfiction. It's just a report of like local bad clients, like rapists, bartenders who rape dancers, you know, after hours, DJs, people that you should look out for. So bad clients for escorts, as well as bad industry people, because there are, you know, DJs in strip clubs who rape strippers and managers. And
these are posts by people you in your network who want you to know that there's.
Yeah.
Give us an example of what would be on the bad date line.
There's two ways to connect. There's street workers, so there's street worker reports, and then like the things that I get personally, not through the Bad Dateline Network. You know, there's this guy in New York City who will pay people with fake money, and then he'll assault them, and then you find out it's fake money. He's on there as Joey the Player, and I've recently gotten a lot more details on him because apparently he's back. He left for a little bit. He's back and he's pulling it again. And we have a guy like that here, Doug Wilsey, who will pay you with like an envelope, and you have to check the envelope because it's newspaper clippings, but to feel like money, and he'll beat you up and rape you. You know, people just, we aren't allowed to talk about that in the areas where we advertise, because again, like in the same way that strip clubs won't kick out people who assault dancers, the advertising venues don't want to kick out rapists because they get money from rapists. So we have to tell each other.
You can find Bad Dateline on the web. It's free, and you can find Red's zine, but that will cost you $20. Red speaks from personal experience here in Portland. The subject of prostitution has a very different look when you talk about it from the law enforcement perspective. Here's the view from the Portland Police Bureau on the life and how people get into it. Is this a place where there are a lot of prostitutes? Do you have any idea how many prostitutes there are here?
There's no way to know that, for sure. The illegal side of this topic is very underground. We usually call them victims in our work, because if they're being trafficked, then they're victims. Not that all prostitutes are victims, but I will probably refer to them as victims because those are the ones that I come across mostly are victims of trafficking.
Could you make a wild estimate of this, like 100 or 1,000? Or
there is no way to quantify how many there are, because it is so incredibly underreported. You're talking about not only citizens, but I think a huge part of it would be non-citizens,
right?
Immigrants,
right,
who are here, who are already afraid of law enforcement for various reasons. And I'm not saying completely unjustified. for us to throw out a number, I think, would be disingenuous because we truly don't know the full extent of it.
Mm-hmm. I think the only thing that we can say is that one website that we have that posts escort ads will have several hundred a day. There are lots more than people think, but we have no way of putting a number on that.
How do you change the life of a prostitute? Again, the police bureau.
And is now living a productive life with her family.
How do you change the mind of that person? Who does that? Do you do that?
We do not do that.
No.
We try, but it's generally a very long-term process. So they're going to need, you know, psychologists. They're going to need counseling, addiction services. They do group therapy. It's a very long, long process.
And when we do these missions, like if we do a mission where we're trying to get a seller, we will have community-based social service groups with us as we're doing these missions.
Right. Chris, you mentioned a few of those. What are the ones you work with most?
LifeWorks Northwest, New Options for Women, Sexual Assault Resource Center, mm-hmm. are probably the two biggest ones. Unless there's has something
those
changed.
Those are the two main ones work with most often.
Right, and we have them there with us on site, and you know, we kind of wall them both off, where we do right now we have to deal with the legal side of it. But we're going to take you into another room, and we're going to walk away. And those two people in there are not police officers. They're here to offer you whatever services you need or want. And then we are hands off. We walk away, and we're done. And then they have time to speak with members of those groups who are just there to help them with advocacy, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. And generally, LifeWorks has at least one advocate who's a survivor mentor, mm-hmm. so they can relate. They're a survivor of the trafficking industry, and they can relate to the women a little bit better than we can.
But let's go back to the street perspective. Are there organizations that work with the police to help prostitutes? Here's Red.
Are the organizations in Portland that work to help women in the sex trade, are they effective? Is there enough support from those organizations?
I can't even think of any organization that helps dancers, let alone prostitutes, sex workers in general. Every so often there are people who kind of like patronize strippers by coming in and giving them cupcakes and telling them that God loves them. We don't have access to resources to help us, like if we need housing, healthcare, anything. So,
yeah.
The groups that we identify that we think are in those roles are not really working with you, is that right?
No.
In my experience, I have a great experience with the Rahab sisters, but they don't have like a mission to save us or to rescue anybody.
No.
They feed people. So I work with them once a month, and I go out and I hand out HIV testing kits to the women that they feed. My neighbor also comes with me because she's low income and she's very elderly, and they feed her too. They're very non-judgmental. You show up, you get fed, you get dessert. They have a little shopping list. You know, if you need clothes, underwear, shampoo, they'll give it to you. That's awesome. That's the only organization that is really concretely doing something. And again, it's a Band-Aid. It's not going to create the structural change that poor people need. If you want to get out of the sex industry, there's no... It's about money. You're doing it for money. If you're not getting another source of money, of course you're going to be stuck in the sex industry.
So let's tell the story of Rahab's sisters. It can be summed up in the term radical hospitality. I saw that term, radical hospitality. What does that mean?
I love it because my favorite thing is that it would be defined differently by each volunteer or guest if you would ask them. But the one consistency would be is that radical hospitality is serving each other at our best without judgment. So anyone that walks through the door from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Every Friday at St. Peter and Paul's Episcopal Church, we accept you as you are that day, as we all have bad days, good days, different types of struggles. I do most of the training for the volunteers, and I hear all the time consistently them say how amazing it is because the guests aren't attempting to be anything because nobody has any pull or power. It's removed from the atmosphere. So they actually see the guests, and the guests are themselves and very present and not trying to pretend to be something different because you can give them housing, right? They get to be completely free.
And if they're in a bad mood, they get to be in a really bad mood.
And that's accepted. Yeah.
Could this idea change the world? Here's the whole story in a nutshell.
And it often it goes back to sexual abuse or some kind of episode that happened early on.
Mm-hmm.
And then from that point, these things just start to spiral. You start to self-medicate. You start to then there's some point, and I haven't figured out what that is. There's some point in our culture where we stop thinking of women as having problems or being victims and victimized, and where they shift over and they are considered the problem.
And here's a test of your empathy skills. Imagine what it's like when a prostitute committing a crime becomes the victim of a crime. Talk about sexual harassment.
I know multiple guests that have come to us in a crisis after a bad deal has went down. Like, I've seen that verbatim myself, where they offered XYZ act to the John, and the John said, yes, I agree. And then she did the XYZ act, and then the John maybe punched her in the eye or did some kind of abuse.
Yeah.
To said guests. And I can tell you, it's by far the most it's double degrading, right? Because this is something someone's doing out of survival, and this is something someone's doing by choice in that moment, for sure. And they are negotiating a contract in their mind, and then to get slapped or abused in any way, shape, or form. It's their shame that they feel, and to be, I guess, exposed to that shame and see it and feel it. It's unlike anything else that you'd ever see. I hope I don't have to go through that. It's been a few times where we've seen guests come in, shortly after. And I'm thankful that we have resources, right? Places for them to go to deal with something like that.
So it's one thing for a prostitute to have agency or control over their situation, but it's an entirely different thing for a sex worker to be a victim. We can see both of these scenarios playing out every day in the world of prostitution, right here in Portland.
And we'd like your feedback. At the end of this series, we'll do a full episode in which you get to speak your mind on this subject. If you have a comment or question about the series or about the sex trade, we'd like to hear it. Call the KABU Newsroom at 503-231-8032, extension 202, and we'll hear you out and put you on the air. I'm Tom.
And I'm Natalie.
And that's it for episode 7 of Sex for Sale.